Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
It's it. We made it. End of June. Officially, sort of halfway through the calendar year, I suppose. It's a Tuesday. Paul and Lindsay with you.
The final Tuesday of June.
She's Lindsay.
That's me.
I'm Paul.
Mm-hmm.
On this day where YouTube TV jacked up your price by $15 and ESPN streaming is going to add another dollar to your monthly fee, we bring you such joyous news on this final day of June, but at least the air is clear.
This is true. And you know what? You gotta pay for all the great content that we're all consuming. And, you know, I'm not a user of YouTube TV, but clearly there are a lot of people that are, and that's why they're bumping it up, right?
Normally when you add price to things, usually you get a little something extra.
Mm.
Just usually helps a little bit. Just saying.
Interesting.
$15.
Yeah.
Dude, Amazon Prime, hi.
Yeah.
Disney Plus, hi. Netflix, hi.
Yep.
Yeah, come on now.
Well, ESPN Plus is looped in with Hulu and Disney.
Silly. You know what I've got? I've got rabbit ears on one of my TVs. Legit.
For the kids that do listen to our program, can you explain what rabbit ears are?
Rabbit ears are this antenna device. It looks like put your fingers in a V. That's essentially what rabbit ears are.
Yes.
And then turn your fingers into like two metal pieces and attach them to a base, then hook like a cable cord or a USB up to the back of your television.
Mm.
And that allows you to pick up TV for free.
The frequency.
I know.
Free.
If you have a digital TV, you can get the TV for free. And you can get most local channels too, including some channels that I'm less like, damn, where'd that come from?
In HD, though?
Oh, no, it's in HD. It's in digital.
Really?
Yeah, it has to be digital. It's required by the government.
They switched that over probably 10 years ago or so. It was a big deal.
Yeah, right.
So everyone had to buy a converter or whatever.
Yeah, there was a little box that you had to run stuff through. But
now
yes,
just
you
started buying new TVs instead.
You can get TV for free, folks. It's possible.
Yeah.
It is possible. You can still watch things.
Just keep paying for everything.
Tell you a quick aside. I was living in central Colorado. One of my first kind of big radio jobs coming out of school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was living at this family's house. They had this little mother-in-law cottage and whatnot, but there was no cable. And so I had the rabbit ears. This was before digital. So I had the little rabbit ears on the thing, and I watched so much sports in Spanish.
Really?
Like it was a World Cup year too, which was so awesome. And it was just nothing but soccer for like 2 months straight.
And it's weird because...
I never knew if it was live or taped because I didn't understand.
I take it you took Spanish at some point in your schooling.
Un poquito.
Yeah, I think I took it for 3 or 4 years in high school. And even though you could take the classes, you're not a native speaker. And especially when you're talking about soccer coverage, things are moving a little bit quicker in the dialect. And obviously, goal! That's the best part.
I did so much research into what's known, Mexican Premier League, La Liga.
La Liga.
But, you know, I was a big fan of the Tijuana team.
Yeah.
Because it was literally, they're from Tijuana.
You went to all of the lengths just to watch the sports.
I love
sports.
You needed something. All right, let's get you the five biggest stories of the afternoon.
It's your daily checkdown, powered by Radio.com Sports. Number one.
This is just coming into us in the last hour and kicks things off here. If you're a fan of the Las Vegas Aviators, you will have to live vicariously through highlights of last year.
And
Major League Baseball has informed Minor League Baseball it will not provide affiliated minor league teams with players for the 2020 season, so there will not be a Minor League Baseball season in 2020.
That sucks.
It does suck.
For a lot of different reasons, but obviously it was too big of a situation for baseball to really handle getting the Major League players back on the field, so by expecting them to do the same with the minor league affiliates would be pretty crazy logistically, but, you know, there's a lot of people that aren't working. Other than the players, too.
Yeah,
you know?
So the Las Vegas ballpark, season one, we still haven't even seen a season two yet.
Right.
It's craziness. Literally the statement from Minor League Baseball says these are unprecedented times.
Right.
And that's what it is. And they're planning for 2021 for sure. And again, a lot of the baseball teams and the minor leagues, they're sending some of the players to the bigger camps as they get ready for the restarted baseball. We still haven't seen a schedule yet.
For the taxi squad,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for that taxi squad, 60-person taxi squad. But that's where we're at.
They have to let the other players that don't get selected for the taxi squad to go out and play in different leagues. And I know that was a point of contention early on that some of the teams are probably going to say no. Well, you've pretty much given up that right at this point, so I hope that they do give anybody who is seeking permission to do that the permission.
Yeah, and you mentioned the trickle-down at this point. They sold season tickets. Mm-hmm. There are sponsorships. There are, you know, bobbleheads and commemorative things that will not be used this year, and especially for the ballparks that just opened up. Fortunately, Las Vegas got past its first year, but there are a number of new ballparks in minor league this year. Mm-hmm. They had commemorative stuff with dates printed on them.
Right.
You know, these are now like literally like clean up, spit up rags at the house.
Yeah. And we're not even talking about the staffing that goes into making those stadiums great on game days. There's a lot of people that are without. So this sucks.
We talked about back in March where there were seniors at the university level and seniors in high school who hadn't realized that they had played their last game ever mm-hmm. for those respective teams. There are minor league baseball teams, because of the possibility of contraction coming next year, that fans of these teams didn't realize that they saw them play for the last time last season.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of tough truths. Hopefully they do everything in their power to get things up and back running next season. But, you know, it's going to be a tough climb because it's just there's a lot of disruption across the board. And, you know, but it's worth it. It's worth it, but it's not in the cards for us here in 2020.
Yeah, minor league baseball done. Season is over.
Number two.
Okay, so for you video gamers, some of you were very happy today. Some of you were kind of mad, but not realizing the full story. So today, they released the cover art for the next NBA 2K video game, and it'll be all-star Portland Trailblazers point guard Damian Lillard. Dame Lillard, also a rapper in his own right.
Good for him.
Not as good as Shaq, and I've been critical of Shaq's rapping ability.
Which Lillard, I full support him.
Lillard is kind of, it's you know, for him, it's fine.
Hey, he's a multi-talented individual.
He does
good
a number of things, but he calls it a dream come true to become the first Portland Trailblazers honor to ever be on the cover of a video game. However, there are a number of fans who are like, seriously, you did this one before you did your Legends cover?
Yeah.
Because they're doing three different covers. So this is like the current
cover. This is the base level cover.
Right. And then they're going to do like a next gen cover, which is rumored to be Zion Williamson of the Pelicans.
Okay.
And then they're going to do a third cover, which is the Legends cover.
Right.
And that's the one everyone's all up in arms about because everyone's thinking it's going to be Kobe Bryant.
Nothing, seems fitting.
Yeah. Nothing has leaked out yet. But everyone's like, why wouldn't you lead with Kobe first?
I don't know. I also don't know why you have three separate covers, but I know that trust me, as someone who is a video game player myself, I get that, but clearly it's to represent the different levels. You have your $60 one with Dame Lillard, then you have the extra bonus pack version with Zion, allegedly, and then all of the packs, all of the different upgrades and whatever else with the top level, but...
yeah.
Let's just wait till we get the entire story before we start burning the franchise to the ground, perhaps.
Like Kobe fans like, what?
And honestly...
But I kind of agree with him. I'm like, I think I would have led with Kobe. Just listen, get it out there. Put it out there.
Yeah.
Don't put him in suspense because I think they might have talked about more about Lillard and if it is Zion in the next cover. I think they would have given themselves more of a chance to continue that conversation. Make everybody happy right away and let the other two just kind of come out.
I know, but it's not like the news is flying into our inboxes each and every day, so they want to tease it out a little bit. But yeah, before we burn this whole thing to the ground, let's wait for the rest of the rest to be revealed.
Right. All right.
Number three.
There you go.
Number three.
Here we are as we talk about the minor league baseball calling it and everybody else trying to restart. We have the hub situation down to four. And perhaps it's four even cities at this point.
Mm-hmm.
This came out earlier today. So final considerations, a report from TSN suggests that it's Las Vegas, Chicago, Toronto, and Edmonton. But in the last 20 minutes, Lindsay, what happened?
Things got a little wonky here, at least allegedly, for the possibility of the NHL coming here for a hub city. They're concerned about the Rona. Completely understandably why. But they're thinking maybe it's going to be Toronto and Edmonton.
Yeah, some of this news trickling out last night a little bit that the Las Vegas wasn't exactly a shoo-in anymore. And we talked about that a little bit, too, a week ago when reports started coming out, you know, basically Sharpie, Las Vegas, and whoever – We still haven't figured out when training camps are going to start because we're still dealing with a number of other issues, and we'll delve into those throughout the hour here. But when it comes to the Hub City decision, which hasn't been made, everybody thought it was like, we'll just wait the weekend and Monday will come. And Monday came and went. And
now we're on Tuesday,
East Coast time. It's a little bit late to be making announcements if they're going to pick Toronto or even Chicago.
Yep.
You don't want to kind of bury that noise. So it feels like we're going to go yet another day without a Hub City. But they're moving forward on it. But...
kind of.
But Las Vegas is not the... Man, that sucks.
Well, we don't know yet, Paul. This is all speculation from sources that are very credible.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen anything official from the NHL. So until we see that, everybody is still on the board.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Down to four. Two in the U.S., two in Canada. And Las Vegas still in it at this point. We'll see what happens.
Wear your masks.
Yeah, no kidding. All right.
Number four.
So the Vegas Golden Knights did make a move today.
They did?
They signed a new goalie. We have a new goalie for the Vegas Golden Knights.
What?
Brand new goalie.
Kind of.
Well, yeah. We already have pictures of him in a Golden Knights uniform, so he's not quite brand new. But he is shiny and new, relatively speaking, when it comes to the goalie world. Goaltender Jiří Patera has been signed to a three-year entry-level contract. He was the runner-up for the Western Hockey League's Goaltender of the Year award last year, playing for the Brandon Wheat Kings.
Wheat Kings?
Played 41 games last year. Percentages that mean more to you than me, but I'm assuming
decent numbers, 2.5 GAA and a 9.21 save percentage. That's pretty healthy.
Sixth rounder back in 2017, so yet another one of those kind of homegrown guys in the first draft for the Knights.
Yep.
And a three-year entry-level contract for Jiří Patera. 6'2", 205, 21. He's from the Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, what do you call him? Checkmate?
Yeah.
The checker.
I don't know. We'll have to watch quick and see, because there's not a lot of highlights to really research online. But we have seen him in development camps with the Golden Knights. But now he's fully into the organization, taking his step into full blown professional status. He'll probably be competing for a spot on the Silver Knights, but more than likely to land on that Fort Wayne Comets team, the ECHL affiliate for your Vegas Golden Knights, just because you're 21 years old, still a young guy, and Sparks is still here technically, even though he's about to enter free agency. Dylan Ferguson's here for a couple more seasons. Then Oscar Dansk
just signed. Yeah,
exactly. Was just extended a couple weeks ago for one more year. So young kid, good kid to have in the pipeline. And from the 45 seconds of highlights I saw of him, very athletic, great lateral movement, challenges the puck, and is really long down low.
Okay. Yep. Well, hey, listen, that's a snapshot of a guy that no one's seen unless you were following the Brandon Wheat Kings.
Hey, and if you do, more power to you. But I do not. I do not.
Not the only goalie news today. Robin Leonard's got a new mask.
It's sick, too. It's fire. That's what I tweeted about it. It's awesome. It's got the panda. It's got the foundation that he's affiliated with, same here. And a lot of really decorative masks on the mask.
Yeah.
Mask on mask on mask.
And he does have Golden Knights colors on it.
Yes.
So there is that, too.
There is that, too.
All right. Lots of
number
goalie
five.
News.
Goalie news!
All right. So the NBA restart means a lot of things if we actually get restarted. One of them, according to Andrew Marchand on the New York Post, means we will not have, Marv Albert on the call because of health concerns. Marv Albert is, I believe, 79.
Yep, so he's in that high-risk demographic.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's 79.
Yeah.
His birthday was like 2 weeks ago.
Happy birthday.
He will not be calling games on site. The question is, will they let him call games remotely? But he won't be traveling to Orlando, and a lot of teams aren't planning on traveling their broadcast teams to Orlando just because of the bubble and just long-term considerations.
Fewer people.
Yeah, so we'll see how that works out. But as we talk about the restart, they are being very real about it in the NBA. And it's interesting because when I first saw this story, when Silver was asked during Time 100 talks through Time magazine, talking about if there's a surge of coronaviruses, will the NBA not play? And he says, we're not full steam no matter what. He's saying things are so unpredictable that we could stop our season.
That's
like in the middle of this restart.
Yep. And that's what I mean. You have to have all of these contingency plans. You have to have a realistic worldview because worst case scenarios have to be planned for. So it's good that he's voicing that this isn't full steam ahead. We are taking in the information as we all are getting it. And we hope everything goes off easy peasy lemon squeezy, but things are getting a little gnarly in the Florida.
Yeah, the Phoenix Suns don't fly out for another week, so most teams aren't leaving for another week. I could imagine that if I'm a player in the NBA that's getting ready to go to the bubble for the next week, I'm living in one.
Oh, like, right.
If I'm looking to play at this point,
I'd already be isolated.
I am like, I have stocked up all the frozen pizzas.
Yes.
At this point,
oh my God,
you know,
we're friends.
I have bagged salad coming out of my ears. I'm eating Eggos, and you know, I've got, you know, meals and bread to last me for the next week at this point. You're living like a college student in a dorm on a budget while you've got a term paper due in like 5 days.
I feel like that's a smart thing to do. It's just minimize as much as possible henceforth.
Right.
So why even risk it?
Yeah. So it's interesting to hear that the NBA is making, you know, essentially another plan to move forward.
That's what smart businesses do.
Oh, no, for sure. You've got another design that's in a way, and they're, you know, dealing with a myriad of things, just trying to get players back on track and into one place. And you know, you've already got one team training in Florida, in the Toronto Raptors, because they can't even go home.
Yeah, a lot of moving parts.
The NBA getting itself back on track, but a familiar voice not going to be there part of that restart. Marv Albert, at least, not going to be on site. All right, there's your check down. Your five biggest stories of the afternoon, powered by Radio.com Sports. Coming up next, J.R. Smith getting ready to finalize his deal with the L.A. Lakers, but is it really an addition? Sports has a history of moves like this. We'll explain next.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul and Lindsay with you on this Tuesday, final Tuesday of June.
Thanks
for hanging out with us. I know you're a big fan of the cardboard cutout thing.
Yes.
The Oakland A's have announced they're also going to do the cardboard cutout thing.
Do they at least have a better name for the program than the Giants
did? Fans in the stands.
Much better.
Well, no. That's not what they called it.
That's what they should call it.
Dave Cavall, who's the president of the A's, they're going to basically join the idea. They're calling them Coliseum cutouts.
That's a lot better.
Yes.
I think there's still some to be desired, but that's a lot better than what the Giants came out with. But they did come up with the original idea.
Yeah, so you get a cutout. You do a cutout, and they'll put you in the stands. $49 if you're like some access member of the A's. And then you get, if you're a full season ticket holder, you get one complimentary credit or complimentary cutout.
Nice.
You can also roll your credits over to the next season as well. $49 to $129 all will go to charity. If your cutout gets hit with a foul ball, they'll send you the ball.
That's awesome. See, this is why it's a good thing. There's creativity involved.
Better part. Oh. There's actually a better part.
Wait, there's more?
There's a visiting fan zone. So fans of other teams can also buy cutouts.
Brilliant.
But apparently, according to Cavall, who's the president, and he's actually really great on Twitter, by the way. If you don't follow Dave Cavall on Twitter, he's actually really accessible. Mm. Like, he answers fan questions and we'll talk to you. Except it's the A's, so there's that.
Yeah.
he says fans of the San Francisco Giants, for instance, can buy cutouts. We'll conveniently be placing them in the seagull zone where the birds can perform target practice.
Brilliant. I love that.
So, but if a ball lands on you, hits you, I guess, in the face.
Hits your flat Stanley version of you.
But it's like a headshot. So their Coliseum cutouts, they will send you the ball.
I love that. So I love that a lot. And they put their own spin on it.
Yeah.
Even better.
Coliseum cutouts. So I
good
know
stuff.
I know you like that one better than the Giants.
Do you like
one.
It better than you did last
I like
week
it,
now?
I do. I like it better than the Giants one, because the Giants one was like, hey, we're just going to put you in the stands and your face will be here. I'm like, no one's going to see you on TV. No one's going to care that your picture's there.
I know.
I just don't see it.
I knew you were a little more bright-eyed and bushy-tailed
right, but
over
I like
there.
That one a little bit better.
Okay.
I do. The A's plan's a little bit better, you know, and if that's the thing. The ball hits you. First of all, that's where, you know, your cardboard cutout's going to go flying. So it's going to look like a deck of cards in a tornado.
Sure.
You know, but, you know, hey, listen, get a free baseball out of it.
Yep.
You know.
People will gamble on it. Absolutely. Probably you.
There you go.
Yep.
It's like Bessie Bingo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Target practice.
I dig it. The Lakers are getting ready to finalize a deal with J.R. Smith. This because coming with starting guard Avery Bradley, who says he's going to not play in the restart in Orlando. And so they're working out a few. They don't have anything, you know, there's really nothing that's going to get in the way of Smith rejoining fellow teammate LeBron James. But is it truly an addition to the team? When you make late season additions like this to your team, it's not necessarily, I don't know if it's a good thing or, but now granted, it's LeBron. He can get guys whipped into shape and whatnot. But we were talking about a team that already had chemistry and you put that team in place. I'm not talking about a G League guy that's replacing someone who's going to sit out.
Yeah. It's like a mercenary, basically.
Right. Yeah. It's, yeah. You're looking to fill roster space because guys are going to get hurt. You need to get people in, but it's not like they're going to be whipped into shape and run your playbook and have that kind of team chemistry.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if J.R. Smith being added to the Lakers is actually an addition to them other than a warm body. He hasn't played in the league in like 2 years.
Yeah, but he, like you said though, Paul, he knows LeBron as much as you could say the playbook. LeBron is the playbook, always kind of has been in whatever team that he's played on, which has included JR. So, and I don't think you're going to see him necessarily starting. I think it's very much, you know, in those times where you need your top rotation guys to get a little bit of a break, and you don't want to trust a younger guy or someone that hasn't had the number of playoff experience, just games, because he's been in on a lot of teams that have made deep runs. He has a ring himself, and so it's kind of, you know, spot changing in and out, but he's not gonna be a main contributor,
right? But I look at him like, but I look at this like, I'm not, there's, because we're talking about it means he's probably going to play a role in this team, and I'm not quite sure what kind of role that's going to be, because you're talking about replacing. He's not going to replace a starter.
No.
Bradley was starting.
No.
So they clearly have to make some moves in Lakerland to get them somewhere in terms. I mean, does LeBron move over to point forward at this point? I mean, becomes like that. I mean, because the whole idea of him surrounding himself with this cast was so he didn't have to carry the load. You know, I mean, Anthony Davis, you know, clearly, you know, top 10
he's
player,
okay.
Top 10 player in the NBA at this point. But it was, you know, for him, I fear that, you know, Lakers fans might be disappointed because they're going to have to, the LeBron's going to, I mean, and LeBron's got fresher legs now. Don't get me wrong. He's got fresher legs. But I'm worried that they're going to push the ball into his hands more and more. And by the time it comes to, because we don't know what's going to happen with these guys, you know, playing in one place and the grind, if it's a mental toll or if it's a physical toll, they're going to have access to, you know, all kinds of stuff. But, you know, what it looks like inside the bubble and what it and how it all starts shaping out, we're not going to know until some of these games start being played. But we've seen what happens when LeBron gets forced the ball.
Right.
It doesn't usually end well. He just he'll get tired towards the end of games. He's got more weapons now for sure, but I'm not sure this is a real addition. I'm not sure this actually fills that need for them.
Well, we also have to remember that unlike the NHL plan to restart, they're not going directly into the playoffs. NBA is going to have some burnout games to decide the lower seeds in the Western Conference. So maybe by bringing J.R. Smith in and some other guys and relying on that deeper bench for those burnout games to make sure that you're getting LeBron, you're getting everybody in and basically lathered up and ready to go for the actual show. But this is an experiment not only in of the athletes existing amidst the Rona, but in terms of what they're asking their bodies to do after taking this much time off and getting healthy. Like, there's some good and there's some bad, but there's going to be an increased injury risk. So you want to manage that. We already have, you know, rules in place for the NBA because they rest players all the time. And so maybe it's just kind of a management thing. But either way, you want somebody in your locker room, in your lineup, no matter where they fall in the depth chart, that if their number gets called, that if their hands are on the steering wheel, they're not going to veer off into traffic. You just want to make sure, can you handle on cruise control? Can you handle this? Okay. We're not expecting you to put 20 up. Can you just make sure that the point spread doesn't go completely in the opposite, and can you make some plays on defense?
Now, I know Bradley, they weren't asking him to do a lot. Paul Lindsay here, Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140, talking about the addition of J.R. Smith to the Lakers and if it is actually truly an addition. And I say because Avery Bradley was a point guard.
Yeah, he was a starter.
Right, exactly. So you're looking for someone to distribute. I mean, I'm looking at guys like, and I'm not saying that maybe Steve Francis could come back and play 12 minutes, but, you know, Jeremy Lin's available.
Wasn't Rajon Rondo on that roster?
Rajon Rondo is on that roster.
He's a pretty darn good point guard. At least he used to be, and he's won a ring.
Yeah, Mr. One-Year Contract.
Hey.
Mr. One-Year Contract. One year.
He's
listen,
on the team.
Hey, no, he absolutely is. But again, I'm not sure that J.R. Smith is the missing piece for the Lakers to create, you know, and
he's not. They're the number one overall seed.
I get this. I just, you know, I'm concerned that, you know, we see these late season additions and we're going to see more because tomorrow's the deadline for the NBA. So there's still going to be some movement, obviously, with people getting signed and whether or not we see any more opt-outs. when it comes to the NBA, but tomorrow's kind of the last day for free agents to be signed. But we've seen this in other sports where guys come in on late trades or they get late signings and they're expected to make impacts and they aren't.
And they're disruptive.
Right, and I think the Lakers have to adjust expectations with Smith. Not that he can't go, and she could shoot me out of a gym. I totally get that. But I think the expectation has to be, because he hasn't played in nearly 2 years, that there's going to be a little rust on the chain, so to speak.
For sure, but there's going to be rust for everyone. If you think about it, this is about as equalized as you could be in a situation, even though it is really unfortunate. But everybody has been taking some time off. Just because he's taking longer, that's going to play. But he's just going to be getting back into it at the same time as everybody else is.
I remember the ESPN 30 for 30 on Sosa and McGuire. McGuire was traded to the Cardinals towards the end of his contract. Mm-hmm. And he came out and said, yeah, I hit maybe like barely my weight, in the first several games of that season. But, he was cheered. But he mentioned that he was cheered by the Cardinals when he finally got to play for them. But he came in there. It wasn't even an impactful signing for them. It was just like, hey, we're going to get Mark McGuire. Great. Let's see him bash a ton of home runs.
Right.
All he did was strike out. It wasn't, it's not like he lifted that team, and I get that he's in the Cardinals Hall of Fame, but it's based on the home run season. It's not necessarily based on his production with the St. Louis Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of those, it was a head scratch. It's like, you made this late season trade. Did it really work out for you?
Sometimes they don't. Sometimes you swing for the fence and you hope for the best and it doesn't work out. Just look at, it's a hockey example, but the Columbus Blue Jackets last year, they had half of their team left via free agency, and they still traded a bunch of their assets last year so they could have a shot to go for a cup. They ended up sweeping out the Tampa Bay Lightning, but then it wasn't enough. They put all their chips in the middle. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but they're the number one seed of the Lakers. LeBron's not getting any younger. J.R. Smith's played with them. It's better than somebody who hasn't played with them or isn't as familiar.
Now, perhaps the trust issue is a thing that I'm not considering. But, I think the expectations have to be set back a little bit. Again, he hasn't played actively in the league for nearly 2 years.
Agreed.
And so for him to be some sort of monster impact player, like it's going to be pushed out there, I'm like, let's step back just a little bit here.
We don't know how they're going to utilize him. He was a sixth man of the year previously. He knows what it means to come off the bench and be expected to perform in limited minutes in big time moments. So why wouldn't you trust this guy over somebody else?
Coming up, there's a delay in announcing the hockey hubs. Some of it has to do with Corona. The other has to do with labor. We'll explore that next.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul and Lindsay with you on this Tuesday, final Tuesday of June. Yes, you made it.
Hello.
You made it.
Good for us.
Yeah, thanks for making us a part of your afternoon and hanging out with us today. Coming up at 4:22 today, Celtics great Cedric Maxwell will be joining the program.
The Cedric Maxwell?
Yes, NBA. He's in the rafters at Boston Garden.
He is. He won a finals MVP, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, very true. Tony Kornacki joins us at 4 o'clock. Cedric Maxwell at 4:22. The hub city debate for the NHL has apparently been narrowed down to four, which we're talking about: Toronto, Edmonton in Canada and in the United States, Las Vegas, us right here, and Chicago. There is a lot more chatter here in the last hour or so that Vegas is moving away from the NHL plan for hub cities because of the coronavirus spike. There are two cities in Canada that could be the front runners, obviously. The two that are left, we're down in our final four.
Yep.
Tomorrow is Canada Day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Just struck me.
Interesting coincidence. Not saying anything.
No, but as we talk about the hub cities and where things could go, and we have all here in Las Vegas will embrace the NHL if and when it comes here to be one of the hub cities, there is now a realistic scenario on the board right now where Edmonton and Toronto become the two hub cities for the NHL. But it's not just about the hubs that they're dealing with in terms of the health and considerations, and as well that the NHL is also kind of dealing with free agency, which is supposed to be tomorrow, and the collective bargaining agreement, which is, baseball was dealing with money, but they have an expiring CBA coming up, but there's a current CBA that's in place with the NHL that needs to be dealt with in terms of getting the play back and get going again.
Absolutely. And there's so many different like just subjects within the CBA that are really causing a lot of the slowdown, not only of all the protocols that they're trying to put in place, but just the announcement of the hub cities. They want to basically have this all done in one package. And one of those big things that's been pretty contentious since it's been put into the labor deals is the concept of escrow. And I'm not a math person, Paul. You know that about me. And most of the listeners do.
It's just about putting money in reserve.
Yes, because the NHL and the players split the revenue 50-50. So essentially when the players get paid, they put a certain percentage into a third party, like you said, into a piggy bank somewhere. And then at the end of the season, when the league knows the final revenue numbers, then if they divvy it up 50-50. So most of the time, players end up giving money away that they earned, but it goes in escrow and then it goes into the owners if it has to be taken to get it to 50-50. And this is a thing because it's been implemented in the last 15 years, and it's really tied to just the revenue sharing and then the salary cap stuff. But the problem is that once you've gone forward with this type of plan with escrow, with the 50-50 revenue split, it's tough to put the genie back in the bottle. Most of the players didn't even know that they were signing up for this, because who really reads through all of these contracts, these
sure.
CBAs? You and I wouldn't do it, let alone players wouldn't do it. They usually find out things the way we do through the media. But it's just it's another point, and it's not like the NHL is exceptional at their labor negotiations, and so there's a lot of moving parts that they have to take into account.
It's clear some of it has to do with being able to play in the Olympic Games in terms of taking a break, because we do have a Winter Games coming up in 2 years. Also, a lot of those things, because tomorrow is July the 1st, a lot of players are due bonuses tomorrow, which is a huge deal in a league and many of the other leagues facing the same kind of thing that hasn't been generating any revenue outside of, you know, maybe some merch sales over the past 3 months. And so they're, you know, the hub city talks are continuing. There's also obviously the CBA negotiations, and a lot of things have to be done by midnight Eastern time. What we're getting from a number of sources right now suggesting that a lot of these things have to get done regardless of an extension, because the bonuses still have to be paid.
Right. And then you're dealing with the fact that the players have had 90% of their contracts already paid out, but the revenue obviously hasn't been there to match the rest of the season because we haven't had the games. And that's what's getting tied up, because those players are going to have to pay back the owners the money. And it's a really complicated thing. You can read more about it. But they're basically being pigeonholed into a spot where this is going to affect not only the earnings from this season going forward, but contracts in the next few years, whether you're a guy trying to sign that big money deal or just like your first contract out of your entry level deal. If the revenue is down, they're not going to be signing you to the big contracts that were being signed these last few years.
There was a thought that they were going to hold the cap this year in the NHL for the next season as well, for 2021-22, as we move into an expansion year as well, with Seattle having that extra revenue with Climate Pledge Arena. That's where they're playing in Seattle. I like that. They should
Thank
call
you.
It the greenery, the greenhouse.
Yes, I like it.
The greenhouse. That because of that extra revenue source would be coming in, they would have another regional television deal in place, that there'd be a little bit more money in the kitty, so to speak, to be able to play with. But because of where we stand right now in the sports world, where everybody's trying to get restarted but still trying to figure out the revenue part of things, this can be the big challenge as they do get the restarts going. Because if you don't have clean labor deals, the NBA's deal's incredibly clean. The NFL got its deal done before Corona and the draft and everything, so those are settled. But it's the NBA, the Major League Baseball, and the NHL now who are sitting on kind of the uncertain times when it comes to the restart and seeing exactly, you know, where things are going to lie and where things go. So aside of all that, aside of the labor negotiations, which again, we talk about numbers, we talk about escrow and where that's going to go, and they'll eventually get that sorted out. We feel that they're going to get that sorted out. We are down to our four hub cities, with two here in the U.S., Las Vegas being one of them, which was considered to be the front runner up until literally the last 24 hours. And who knows, we could still be the front runner and this could be a monster smoke screen at this point. But it's Las Vegas and Chicago, along with Toronto and Edmonton. Do you think the hockey-watching public, Lindsay, is going to care if both cities are in Canada at this point? Or are they just craving the hockey so much as a fan in the United States, and you're a hockey fan that lives here in the United States, will it matter if they're playing in Toronto and Edmonton as opposed to being able to show glamour shots of Las Vegas or even Chicago?
It's not going to matter to me as a person who would watch the playoffs regardless. The hardcore hockey people are going to find the game wherever it is. But as I kind of as we kind of discussed this in the last couple weeks when it was rumored saying, well, Las Vegas isn't as a solid plan as we had previously thought. The NHL really has a problem with reaching out to new fans, casual fans. But the way that they do it and the way that it is most beneficial to them is during the Stanley Cup playoffs, because that's when the game is at its best. It's at its highest levels. It's at its most intense. But when you're not having the American context, where you're not having the same TV crew that you would usually associate with that coverage, instead it's Canadian. I'm not saying all people are going to be like, yeah, we're not going to watch this anymore. But some of them will. Some of them won't seek it out because it's not as readily available. And it's all about exposure at this point. And I'm not saying the NHL isn't planning for it, but it's going to hurt. There's going to be definite drawbacks to it, I think. What about you?
I don't have a problem seeing it wherever it is because it's hockey. And the only way you're going to know that they're playing in Toronto and Edmonton is when they tell you at this point.
Yeah.
So I think fans are just going to follow their teams and, you know, mark their calendar and set alarms at this point, because we don't know what the schedule like. We don't know what the schedule is going to look like. They haven't released it. They're not even moving into camps at this point.
Right.
But I think once the schedule comes out, I think fans will just flock to their teams, not worry too much about the sports, because we are going to be deluged with sports coming in August and September. Just everything is going to come back real quick, real hardcore. And when it comes to just the fans, they're going to seek out the games regardless of where they're going to be. Will it suck that it's not here if that's truly what's going to happen, that it's not going to be here in Las Vegas? Yeah, because I think Las Vegas could show that it can. It's not just a one-trick pony, that it wasn't about this amazing one year, this amazing just kind of like, hey, everybody rallied around hockey at this point and continues to do so for 3 years, that you could show that there's a fan base here in town. We would welcome them. There's no doubt about it. And we could use a shot in the arm like the others, too. I mean, we had the draft kind of ripped out from our arms.
But it's not all about Vegas.
No, it's not.
It's not about showcasing whether or not a city is a great spot for the game, because we know that Las Vegas is a great spot for the game, as well as all the other cities that are still in contention. But that's the thing. And that's, I also need to remember too, the NHL is probably thinking about this as well, and that they have to, because there's TV contracts and they have smart people in their organizations and their business. They're probably going to help. They're going to do some things to help mitigate this. We're going to have to see some creative juices come out of the NHL, some that we've never really seen before. You know what? I'll believe it. Like, let's do it. I believe that they have it in their repertoire. And so maybe it goes off without a hitch, and maybe all of my concerns are completely misguided. But, you know, I think it's unfortunate if they're both in Canada, but it's not like we're dealing with a fortuitous situation.
I'm just wondering if there's some pressure that they feel, you know, to finish the season whatsoever, because the NBA is in that same boat, you know, where, you know, we haven't crowned a champion. That, you know, Gary Bettman has been very adamant from day one, from the first days of when they started canceling all the games until we went into the ultimate pause, I guess is what we could call it.
Mm-hmm.
He's been very adamant about, we're going to have a traditional Stanley Cup playoff schedule. This is going to happen. We are going to finish out this year. I don't know if he's saying that to the veterans. I don't know if he's saying that to the younger clubs who find themselves in the 5 and 6 and 7 seeds, to give them a fair shot at, you know, playing for a championship, because some of these guys, I mean, again, you look at some of the age of some of the players that, you know, we see that will be playing, you know, these guys are, you know, this might be their last opportunity to do so. Does it feel like he owes them like a debt or something to keep kind of this dream of playing for the cup alive?
Oh, absolutely. There's an element of that, but there's also the element of the dollar. And as I said earlier, most of the players have been paid out 90% of what they're owed this season. So the owners don't have the revenue to back it up. So that's why there's a rush to do it, because you have to try to recoup some of that lost revenue just to make up for it. So, yes, there's absolutely the feel-good reasons to do it. We want to make sure we give these teams, like the Boston Bruins, who have a lot of veterans on their team. Even if you have young guys and most of these guys are going to come back to the team next year, it's not the same team. It's not the same situation. That's what makes sports special. That's why your end-of-the-year speech is, before that last game, you're never going to be in this locker room with all these guys at the same time ever again. You're never going to be in this moment.
Yep.
So,
down to 4 hub cities awaiting announcement from NHL. If it happens during the show, we'll bring it to you, obviously. Coming up next, your daily pep talk.
You found the Playmakers
on a Tuesday
on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul and Lindsay with you, Playmakers. Tony Dasco joins at the top of the hour, the 4 o'clock hour 2 of the show, and coming up at 4:22. Stick around as we bring on an NBA legend, Cedric Maxwell, formerly of the Boston Celtics, former finals MVP. His jersey, or at least his jersey number, hangs in the rafters at the Boston Garden, which is now the TD Ameritrade.
The TD Garden.
TD Garden.
That's what it is.
They just call it TD Garden.
A garden.
It's still a garden.
We're going down to the garden.
Right. Sorry, you're a big Boston. Yeah, I'm sure you and him can trade a bunch of Boston stories
together.
Oh,
I'm sure. Looking forward to our conversation with Cedric.
It's time for a daily pep talk.
It is time for a pep talk, Paul, and it comes to us from the Tube of You from Chispa Motivation. No excuses. Let's run that tape, Trent.
How do you stop making excuses? This is actually pretty simple. And I said it the other day, and you have to realize, you have to know, you have to accept that all your excuses are lies. They are lies, all of them. Think about the things that you tell yourself, the lies you use to rationalize taking the easy road. Taking the easy road and leaving discipline behind. Think about them.
Always something there to build a case on why you can't move on, why you can't grow to the next level, why you can't begin to manifest your greatness, why you can't begin to live life on your terms. Always something there to block you, to keep you where you are, and keep you from beginning to develop your true greatness. Always some fear. How do we handle it? And I'm saying that if you've been hiding out behind but, if you've been using the fact that you don't have enough money or you don't have the education, take it head on. Go get the education.
You don't have time. That's a lie. You don't have support. That's a lie. You don't know the best way. Or you're too old or you're too young. Of course you're too old or too young. Lie. And there's you're too busy. Sure you are. That's a lie. And you're too tired or you're too sore or you're just plain not feeling it. Lies, lies, lies. And the list goes on and on and on. And it doesn't stop if you don't make it stop.
What happens is about the same. You might put that in parentheses here. Same. What people do, that's what's different. Everything can happen. Anything can happen. But it's not the happenings. It's what you do about it. Somebody says, yeah, but you don't understand the disappointments I've had. Come on.
See, a lot of people pretend that they want more out of life. But all you have to do is watch their actions. People will tell you, oh, yeah, one day I want to have a restaurant. See, they're pretending they want to go into business for themselves. They're not serious. How can you tell, Les? Watch their actions. Watch what they're doing. The proof is in the pudding. So if you want to do something, if you thought about something you want to do, take it head on. Decide that you're going to start looking at it, start doing research on it, start tackling it, start becoming involved in whatever and wherever it might lead you to begin to explore the possibilities in that particular thing that you're seeking so that you can begin to learn all you can about it.
So recognize. Recognize the excuses are not valid. They aren't. They're trumped up. They're conjured up. They're fabricated. They're lies. And how do you stop the lies? You stop the lies with the truth. The truth. The truth will set you free. The truth will stand, and the truth will deliver you from procrastination and laziness and the downward spiral that comes with a lack of discipline. So, don't believe the lies, believe the truth. And the truth is, you have time. You have the skill, you have the knowledge and the support and the willpower and the discipline to get it done. So cast out the lies, burn them down, and listen to the truth. Then live the truth and go out and get it done.
Decide that you're going to face it, that whatever shortcomings you have, that you're going to strengthen yourself there. Whatever training that's required, that you're going to go get that training, that you're going to get started right now. George Washington Carver would say, do what you can, where you are, with what you have, and never be satisfied. Always strive to be more than that which you are. Yeah, don't get satisfied with yourself. Always know that wherever you are, you can enjoy more, that you deserve more. Most of us go through life pretending. Pretending that we're satisfied where we are. Pretending that everything is okay. Pretending that we don't have any special goals or ambitions or desires, when really deep down inside, we do really want more. But most people, you know what they do? Most people go through life quietly and safely, tiptoeing to an early grave. Find out what it is you want and go after it as if your life depends on it. Why? Because it does.
Bring it on. There it is.
Well, there it is.
Yeah, some motivation for your Tuesday to get you moving again today. Always try to close out hour number one of the program with a little bit of motivation to get you moving. Today's a good day to get moving, too.
True that.
I need to take some deep breaths outside because I won't be inhaling all the dust and nastiness.
This is true.
Especially if we don't get the Hub City thing. It'd be kind of rough. All right, coming up the next hour, Tony Cordasco joins at the top of the hour, and then Cedric Maxwell of the Boston Celtics fame will be joining the program at 4:22. Pick his brain about the NBA, past, present, and future. Stick around on this Tuesday's edition of the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
Greetings and salutations on this absolutely gorgeous Tuesday on the very last day of June 30th of the year 2020. My name is Lindsay Brown, and I am joined each and every day by my co-host, my partner in crime, my debate sparring partner, Mr. Las Vegas, Uncle Tony Cordasco. Dasco, what's up, my dude?
Yo, Linz. I just been listening to TSN in Edmonton.
Oh, really?
And listening back and forth to see if there's any news about the NHL hub cities. And last report was that Edmonton and Toronto were gaining momentum.
Yes.
Due to the rise of COVID-19 here. So
yes.
I suspect they're going to... Doesn't it feel like a game show where they just keep eliminating cities? Like one... This is like The Bachelor, and the final two cities get roses. That's
absolutely
how I feel. It's been shaken out. It's kind of crazy. Why do they keep just eliminating one city at a time? I know it's fluid. I understand that.
Right.
But it still seems kind of, it's almost as bizarre as the draft lottery.
Yeah, it's a weird time to be a sports league right now. I mean, nothing is official, but you're absolutely right. There's definitely some momentum towards two Canadian cities, Edmonton and Toronto, being selected as the hub cities. But we have not heard anything official from the NHL, so we will keep the good thoughts and the good vibes and our fingers crossed that Las Vegas is named. But it's completely understandable why they're taking a second look or maybe getting a little nervous here. But Dasco, we usually like to start the show off with some shameless self-promotion from your Twitter account with your Don't At Me with Uncle Dasco portion here. So what do you want to share from your brain that you've already put out on the Ethernet today, my friend?
I am about to opt out of 2020. That's my tweet. That's the tweet.
I would like to second that motion as well.
Can we just opt out? And you were saying, oh, it's the final day of June.
It
I'm
is.
Like, where did the month of June go? Like the entire month of June was a June swoon.
Yeah.
It's gone.
No, it still feels like yesterday was March. So that's why it's even more bizarre. You're like, oh, it's the end of June. 4 months have passed. What has happened? Everything has happened. That is what has happened. But I'm sure you and I aren't alone in our willingness and wishing that we 2020. We could just like skip this. But you know what? There are things turning around. There are things percolating. Sports are right around the corner. But we just all got to wear our masks and do right by each other. Right, Daskey?
Absolutely. I just feel if we had the opportunity, I think many of us would just opt out of the year.
Yes, absolutely.
We've learned some lessons.
Yep.
And it's been a lot of fun. But okay, time to move on.
And that's a good way for us to move on into our next portion of our segment here, where we like to stick to sports because that's what we're told to do. But Dasko, there's this crazy concept that sports and current events actually exist in the same reality. So we must discuss them because we live in that same reality, Dasko. And earlier today, this came down via radio.com sports. On Tuesday, the NFLPA president and Browns center J.C. Treader penned an op-ed in the Players Union website that advocated for protecting the rights of football players as league heads into what is guaranteed to be a unique 2020 season. And I don't think it's a bizarre concept for any of us to be like, yeah, if I have a job, I expect certain rights and certain things to come with that because there are standards. This is a business and there are rules. And I thought JC did a really good job of kind of just putting out a quote or a question that people kind of come at athletes with and then kind of giving his rebuttal of why they're doing the amount of research, the amount of negotiations that they are and what goes into this. Just getting this season off the ground, that it's not just, oh, players, raise your hand if you're willing to show up. Okay, everybody show up to the camp. Like, that's not how this works, Dasko. And so I kind of wanted to run through some of these. Is there any of them that stuck out to you in terms of a question and that a good rebuttal from him that that he highlighted in this Players Association website article here?
Yeah, I read the article, and then I read another column about it, and it was just about, like, you know, the fact that he said that a lot of the narratives that they face as athletes are often recycled, and they undermine the leverage and their power as players. And, you know, on a Zoom call last month, just take a step back, J.C. Treader was the one that said, this is a contact disease, and we play in a contact sport. And I'll tell you what, he's become a true leader.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, you and I talk about a lot of the players. Yes, we understand. We know it's a contact sport. But if you're a big lineman, you would have a chance, and you're at a greater risk, right?
Right.
And he says, you know, we are not invincible. Underlying conditions like BMI, asthma, sleep apnea are associated with a higher risk of developing severe symptoms and complications when infected with COVID-19. And he said that the NFL Players Association would be fighting at their most for at-risk players. And I'm very concerned about the bigger players, you know, the linemen.
Right.
Too. You and I have spoken about that ad nauseum on this show. And I just feel that they are put at a greater risk because they are bigger and have a chance, you know, of
right.
having some ailments and whatever, overweight. Ton of things.
Exactly. So, and like you said, we're there's increased risk here, and it's not like any of the current CBAs for any of the sports league other than say having a clause like if one of these disaster scenarios happened, we need to move on to this, you know, this protocol. But all these protocols that he's talking about and that all these leagues are trying to tease out to get down, you know, those have real world consequences on these players if they aren't, you know, teased out to the nth degree, that they aren't all agreed upon. And you could say, Dasko, you know, well, I had to go back to work. You should have to go back to work too, because I'm taking risks by working, and that's completely plausible. But and that's why JC literally answered that very question, or at least way that people tried to argue this. And he said it's the responsibility of the employer to provide a safe work environment, and that he encourages everyone to hold their employers accountable to high standards. So why would football be any different? As you said, Dasko, if the game of football is a perfect storm for virus transmission. In just terms of you're having guys stand next to each other, sweating for long periods of time. They're tackling each other. They're on top of one another. And so all of that, you can't take that out of the game. So we need to plan for it. And we need to plan if there's an increased risk. We need to make sure that they're taking care of their players, because at the end of the day, the players are the product. And that's the important thing that we all have to kind of realize, because we 100%, as much as we think that we're removed and we're just kind of bystanders or fans, you know, what we tweet, what we say, what we read, what we gravitate towards in the media, that it's not always true. You know, sometimes there's spin involved. Sometimes that's used in negotiations and whatnot. And so that's why I kind of appreciate him kind of going through all of these clapbacks that people are sending towards athletes' way, saying, just get out on the field and play. Like, we need sports back. Well, I'm sure they want to get back, too.
Lens, and then you know, one of the questions that did stand out to me as I went back, you know, to that article was the question of, you should just play for the love of our game, for the love of the game. And, you know, and then he just comes back, you know, his rebuttal was, I love what I do. I know a lot of my peers love what they do. There are people in all different professions who love what they do. Being passionate about your job shouldn't prevent you from seeking better pay, benefits, and work rules from your employer. Our careers are short and painful. Like every other worker, we should always work to maximize what we get for our services and realize our full value.
So exactly.
It makes a lot of sense when he breaks down, you know, each question.
Right.
And yes, their careers are very short, and they leave. If you get out of professional football and you're healthy, just consider yourself lucky.
Right.
You know, because I know players that later on, as time goes by, they can't get out of bed in the morning.
Right.
You know,
those after effects of all the trauma and the abuse. And that's present in each and every player's mind and as they suit up for any game. But especially now, because the added risk of the virus, we don't know about how it affects everybody's bodies after, even if you're able to beat it and you're able to get back on the field. You know, there are guys. Rudy Gobert says he's still not fully recovered. Von Miller has been very vocal about his
positive. Von Miller said he can't even breathe.
Exactly.
He said his breathing is affected because of COVID-19.
Exactly. And like you said, the NFL, those careers are short. They got to maximize the value while they can. So you're asking these guys for their small window just to be like, yeah, we'll just make this up as we go along. We'll just see what happens. No, because guess what? If they're the ones that get sick and have those after effects that make them or that render them unable to play anymore, guess what? They're on their own. Right.
And Treader's been on top of this. I think he's been very proactive. And what he's been doing is, I guess he does biweekly calls with the players and their wives to answer questions. And he has doctors on the calls, on Zoom calls. And he's very helpful, you know, for the players. And you need people like this, you know, to help to advocate safety, player safety.
Yep.
And he said it's never more important to adhere to protecting the players through the NFLPA than now.
Yeah, very exactly. Important. As you said, a great example of leadership. He is the NFLPA president. So as you said, somebody has to be that advocate. That's his job. And I think that he's doing a damn good job of it so far. And so hopefully all those things get figured out and we can have that football season. But there is more for our sticking to sports segment here. I'm not sure, Dasko, how active you are on Instagram. But last night, Colorado Rockies outfielder Ian Desmond, I saw his post kind of come across my Twitter feed, and then I went directly to it within the hour that it was tweeted. But he had a really powerful Instagram post last night announcing that he's opting out of playing this season for the Colorado Rockies, but also went into a lot of his childhood, his memories, and using that to illustrate the larger context that we're living in and how he says baseball is failing in helping minorities, especially children, to play and advance in the sport. Dasko, did you see this last night, or did you learn about this when I put this in the schedule?
I saw it today, and I had seen headlines, you know, with him last night, and I didn't really read much about it or into it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's like a lot of where they're losing the game, where they can't build the game, is through inner cities. I think hockey's got the same issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
They asked Ryan Reeves about how come there aren't more blacks in hockey, and he came back with, hey, you know what? It's an expensive sport,
mm-hmm.
and the kids mostly primarily in inner cities can't play because it's too expensive. And he's absolutely right. And so it is incumbent on a lot of these stars, a lot of the players and professional athletes to help to grow the sport themselves and help it organically and build the fields. And today, most of the players aren't coming from the U.S. In Major League Baseball. They're coming from the Dominican Republic. Why? Because there's baseball fields everywhere.
Right.
That's all that the kids are doing is playing baseball.
Exactly.
So you don't have the growth in baseball here in the States because you don't help them out. They need to be helped out, and they need people to stand behind them and take a chunk of your money and help the youth.
Right.
You know, of today. And it keeps you out of trouble, too.
Right.
As a kid.
Well,
you know,
it's,
I was a knucklehead once, and what kept us out of trouble was playing sports.
Exactly. And it's not like youth sports has completely eroded away. I mean, arguably, it's probably at its height, or at least it was before the COVID came down. But the thing is that there's been a shift in the way that we develop kids as athletes. And that's the thing. A lot of these kids that we talk about, the professionalization of sports, instead of playing, you know, your in-house town, you know, little league, these kids are doing traveling teams. They're doing different showcases. And so it kind of erodes away that communal cultural kind of shared space with baseball. And if you're having all the best kids leave or always, you know, choose the traveling team over the in-house team, because if they say, I want to stay home and play with my friends, and they're going to kick off the team and they have big dreams and big aspirations, it doesn't take a genius to figure out how we got where we are. And Desmond had all these thoughts because he was visiting his hometown and the fields that he grew up playing on in Sarasota as a kid. And he wrote about how they looked run down and neglected and how important youth baseball was for him growing up. And he said, why can't we support teaching the game to all kids, but especially those in underprivileged communities? Why aren't accessible, affordable youth sports viewed as an essential opportunity to affect kids' development as opposed to money-making propositions and recruiting chances? It's hard to wrap your head around it. And as I said, it's like a 7 or 8 page just basically letter explaining his reasoning why he's opting out and what he's going to be doing in the meantime. But he's overall, the messaging is very much about his concern for not just baseball in general and how it's eroded away in the youth levels, but how it is the culture that still remains around it, that remains in Major League Baseball locker rooms, that has rampant sexism, racism, homophobia, and it's
said individualism,
yeah,
on the field.
Exactly.
It just came all out. Sexist, homophobic jokes, flat out problems. We've got cheating. We've got minority issues from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
He just let it go. He let loose.
Right, exactly. And he used a few examples of his experiences growing up and playing baseball, where that is your safe haven. That's where your happy place for a lot of us that grow up playing sports, and how, you know, he's one of two black kids on his team, and he has his teammates across the field warming up saying white power. You're just kind of like, and nobody says anything because he's there. It makes sense. It doesn't make sense because it's wrong, but you understand how that isolationist feeling kind of creeps in. And that, as I said, that's supposed to be your happy place. That's supposed to be your place where you play, where you're most yourself, where you're free, and you're dealing with the racism on top of it. And now you're seeing the after effects of all the inequalities that are present throughout the game.
You talked about touring teams. The touring teams are made for what? For kids whose parents have money.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
It's not for the underprivileged youth. It's not for the kids that are out there that are getting in trouble because they don't have an outlet. They don't have this outlet. Hey, trust me, I've been there. I've lived through all of this stuff, you know, and growing up in an inner city, you look for outlets. You want to play sports when you're a young kid. And that's the only thing that detracts you from getting into trouble, because there's plenty of trouble like around you,
right,
and stuff. So did Ian Desmond, did he opt out because his wife is pregnant? And he has 4 children. Was
I'm sure it's a bunch of different reasonings. I think he cited the family side. He obviously wants to do some work in his community to help rebuild the Little League baseball community.
Terrific.
There. And but nonetheless, if you haven't seen it yet, you should find it, his profile on Instagram. It's I_DEZ20. Make sure that you read through all 7 or 8 of those slides. But Dasko, we got to move on because we have a big guest in just a couple of minutes.
Can't wait.
Celtics legend, absolute legend, Cedric Maxwell is going to join us to talk all about the NBA. So we got to get to our break and get to him. We're the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Welcome back on the Playmakers. Tony Cardasco and Lindsey Brown on CBS Sports Radio 1140. Our guest this afternoon is the former Boston Celtic great, 2-time NBA champion, finals MVP in 1981, and current Celtics radio color analyst, we'd like to welcome Cedric Cornbread Maxwell to the show. Ced, thanks for joining us today.
I want to thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate you guys having me. I'm going to ask you guys a question. I had planned on a trip coming out to Vegas here in about 2 weeks. I'm thinking, like, should I come? Is it good?
Yeah, it looks a little dicey.
Yeah, it doesn't look so good right now. There's a COVID cloud over the city. It's hovering.
Oh, my gosh. I was thinking that before, and it was cheap flights. It was a flight from Boston, one way from Boston to Vegas was $62 on JetBlue. And I'm like, so I'm jumping on the bandwagon. Now I'm thinking, like, what was I thinking about? Having a mask on and it's 110 degrees? I don't know if I could do that.
Yeah.
Cedric Cornbread Maxwell's with us. So I wanted to start things off by asking you, if you were still in the show, would you feel safe enough to play in the bubble in Florida? The NBA is ensuring every safeguard set, every protocol is in place. And we have to ask, would you be there, or would Cedric Maxwell in his prime, say back in the early 1980s, opt out? Would you opt out?
I think I'd play. I mean, I think that we're trying to do every precaution, you know, that's possible. I think a lot of it depends on now a financial situation, and not for just the NBA now, but for the future. If the NBA does not complete this season, then what happens? They can go back. They can change. The owners can go back. The governor can go back and change the collective bargaining agreement. And guys like Jason Tatum, those guys won't be able to get those huge contracts. So I think that it's a real fine balance. And I know people are screaming right now saying, well, what about your life? Well, everybody, right, the NBA seems like they're trying to take as many precautions as they can about this thing. And we're just living in a completely different world. Cedric Maxwell right now would go and he would play if it was during this time with all the precautions out there.
Well, Cedric, Lindsey Brown here, since you're all in on going down there, that leads me into my first question here. Which team do you think prime level Cedric Maxwell would your skill set fit best with if you were still playing today? Which team would you chase a ring with?
Wow. I would want to chase it with the Celtics, actually. I think that they, you know, this is a team because of the COVID, the way it is now, and the Celtics aren't top heavy with a LeBron or Giannis, one player away. You know, you have a multitude of players for the Celtics right now that can give you 30 or 40 any night. So I think the deeper teams that are out here in the NBA, and Celtics happen to have the deepest roster with their talent level, I think that's the team I would want to be on. And that's not because I'm doing the games, but I just feel that way about the Celtics because of their depth.
Cedric Cornbread Maxwell is with us. The NBA said that it could allow players to wear social justice messages on their jerseys upon resumption of play. So if you were still in the league, have you given any thought to what message you might have on the back of your jersey?
You know, that is really interesting because I have a podcast, and a podcast we were asking those same questions. What could go too far? Who would be the word police? Who would guard against something?
do they have word police? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you would think that there's some words you were not going to be able to put on the back of your jersey. I mean, like, you couldn't put up there, go to hell. You couldn't put that up there on the back of your jersey instead of your name. But I think if I was putting something on my back of my jersey right now as a statement, it probably would be, it seems cliche, but it seems so powerful, I would say, I can't breathe. I think that would be the ultimate message I would have. But knowing me, if it was really and it was me, I think I would try to slap somebody in the face and not on the back of, I say, shut up and just dribble. I think that's what I'd have. I think I'd go that way.
It's a lot of characters.
Yeah, absolutely. There's going to be a lot of guys making decisions there. And that's just one way that at least is rumor that the NBA is discussing of using their platform to amplify the voices and the messages around the issues of police brutality, systemic racism and equality here in our country. But what do you think needs to be more? They're talking about maybe putting Black Lives Matter on the sidelines and stuff. But how does the NBA make sure that messaging and those voices places stay at the forefront of their resumation here?
I think that they're already doing an excellent job by letting their players go out and speak. I mean, you look at the NBA. NBA is the leader, has been the leader in almost this whole virus. You know, they stopped their league and everybody else stopped theirs. The NBA is coming back, had plans to come back. Everybody else is saying they're coming back. You know, who have been the most vocal? And this is one of the things I think is pretty crazy to me. I've always thought that Michael Jordan is, you know, Michael Jordan and LeBron were kind of like the GOATs. Well, you know, with the way things are going now, I would probably put LeBron from a standpoint of everything. I'm not just basketball, but from a social standpoint. LeBron James right now is the captain of the ship for not only the NBA, but almost every sports venue out there when it comes to social justice and things are going on. How many players have you heard right now from different teams say, well, you know, Kyrie says, well, I don't want to play. Well, LeBron says, I'm a play. And then you hear a couple other guys say, well, hey, LeBron say he's playing, I'm playing. So I think in that sense, the NBA has done a great job of letting their players being as expressive as they wanted to be. You haven't heard any NBA teams go out to squash anything their players. Jaylen Brown, one of the Celtic players right now, drove 15 hours from Boston to be in Atlanta for a protest. He drove there. So I just think it really shows what the NBA is all about, especially with this whole thing about the racial and violence going on, all the racism, all these things. The NBA has been at the forefront.
Cedric Maxwell is with us on the Playmakers. His number 31, retired by the Celtics, 11 seasons in the NBA. The thing I remember most about your game, Cedric, so strong in the low post. Talk about the 1984 NBA Finals. Before Game 7 against the Lakers, you told your team to climb on your back. You came up big. You scored 24 points. What was the rivalry like against L.A.? And didn't you give, I was trying to think back, didn't you give James Worthy the choke sign in that series when he couldn't make free throws?
They would have threw me out the league by then. I mean, all the things I did, all the things that people did at that time, Kurt Rambis being clotheslined at that time, the NBA, Kevin McHale, who is not a physical, violent person, clotheslined Rambis during that series and changed the dynamics of the way the Lakers started to play. Their fast break went into a slow break because they were a little intimidated by the Celtics. If you want to tell me how I felt about the player, let me tell you how I felt about the Lakers. If they were in a car and I was driving by and that car was on fire and I had a glass of water, I would drink the water. I wouldn't pour it on. I would just drink the water. That's how much I hated anything about the Lakers. Even today, it was last year at this time. We had a game at in L.A., and we were doing a pregame, and it was with myself, Michael Cooper, who else was there? And then all of a sudden, it was another Laker player. Oh, Kurt Rambis, myself, Brian Scalabrine, a couple Celtic players. Well, we were doing this thing, and then who pops his head in the room and just like, oh, I didn't know you were having a press conference in here. Magic Johnson. And he comes up to me and says, you want to shake my hand? He said, yo, man, shake my hand. I said, man, I ain't shaking your damn hand. He said, no, man, come on, show me love. I finally had to shake his hand, but I did it reluctantly. That's how I felt about the Lakers at that time. And that, you think about it, that series probably catapulted the NBA into superstardom more than any other series, I would think.
Absolutely. And the physicality in that series and during that era of the NBA is not matched in the current game. But there is an injury concern when we're talking about the restart, because these guys are taking a considerable amount of time off. They're not going to they haven't had access to gyms as much as they have. So are you concerned about these guys getting off the couch and then being expected to get into championship caliber form? They're not taking the body blows that you were handing out, but they're going to be expected to play at their best in a very crazy situation. Are you concerned about that?
I would think about the players that are out there and who they might be. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, both our players, both the Celtic players right now, are 21 and 22. Man, you roll out of bed, you could care less about, you know, how much time you've been off. And you go out and you play. it's the older guys like LeBron. Those are the guys who are going to be affected by the layoff. The timing, the speed of the game, all that thing is going to affect them a lot more. I was looking at another thing about Jason Tatum, and Jason Tatum had been going buck wild in the last 3 or 4 weeks. He was averaging about 28 points a game in the league, all these games he had been playing. Well, he hadn't touched the basketball in about 2 months. That might be really good. Can you imagine that, you know, guys who have played basketball all their lives being away from the game for 2.5, 3 months? The love of the game is going to be that much more. So I'm not as concerned about the injury thing as most people, because I just believe guys are going to get back in shape. You have 7 games right now, which are like an exhibition game. It's going to be for playoff standings, but I think it gets them into a position not going directly into the playoffs, but playing some games to kind of get back into the feel of the game.
Cedric Maxwell's with us. In 1977, I remember, I'm going to go to the way back machine here. I remember you playing against UNLV. You played in the third place game in the NCAA tournament. The Rebels won that game. You scored 30 points. Sad, your 30th point was a bank-in free throw. That's for another time. But how good was that 77 running Rebels team you played against? Mm-hmm. And the NC2A, I like the national consolation game. They did away with that in 1981.
Well, look, first of all, I hated the consolation game. Here's the thing about the Rebels at that time. We had 2 guys who scored 30. We had another guy, Chad Kinch, who scored 30, and another guy who scored 28. We still got beat by 10. That's how they were. They were like an NBA team, and for them to lose that game, to think back on it, to lose the game against Marquette, Carolina, who eventually won it, that to me is kind of crazy because they just had a dynamic role. The reason I hated the third place game, and I played in, I think, the last one, is because that's what it was. Like, what are you playing for, third place? I didn't see playing for second, but third place, let us go home. Let us have our dignity. But we had to play a warm-up game before the championship game. That was a little crazy.
Well, Cedric, we definitely appreciate your time. We'll have to catch up again soon. Thanks for joining us today on the Playmakers.
Well, thank you very much. Doesn't look like it's going to be in Vegas after this news you guys have told me. You guys are the best ambassadors right now for travel, I know.
Right on. Well,
if
we'll
you
have
come
you down
through, you better look us up. Yeah, you better look us up if you do come through.
I would do just that. You guys have a good one. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Cedric Maxwell, once again, former Celtics great. And we'll be back with more after this on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Home stretch for us here on the Playmakers. Lindsey Brown and Tony Cordasco hanging with you guys here until 5. Just got through a really interesting and funny and bubbly conversation with Celtics legend Cedric Maxwell. Dasco, you were asking him a lot of college hoops questions, some questions from back in the day, but that guy has a personality.
The way back machine.
Yeah, there's no question why he has a radio show and why he's so involved with the Celtics himself. But if you missed any part of that conversation, you can find that on the radio.com app that you already have downloaded on your phone. If you don't, it's in the app store. Once you download it, search out CBS Sports Radio, and you should be able to find that with that rewind feature down at the bottom. And then while you're at it, why don't you subscribe to the Saturday Sports Beat and Nightcap podcast? Because Dasco and I, we like to share our sports knowledge with other people, and the other people are you. So hopefully you're able to download that and get things going. But Dasco, you and I probably have been known to have some attention-seeking behavior once in a while over the course of our lives. That's not too far of a stretch, is it?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Good to know. And one person that is definitely a name that dominates headlines whenever he is mentioned or a story comes out about him. And Tom Brady just cannot help himself to steal the spotlight, because we all know that he left the Patriots to join Tampa Bay, and Bruce Arians brought Gronk with him, hoping to take over the NFC South and march towards another Super Bowl ring. But he left Julian Edelman behind and Bill Belichick and all the Patriots behind. But they were going to make things work with Jared Stidham, but they were able to sign Cam Newton to a 1-year deal earlier this week, Dasco. And Julian Edelman, I feel like he probably felt like I'm the guy on the outside. I was kind of left behind. This season might not be so great, but he was really excited, obviously, that they signed Cam Newton, that he posted on his Instagram with a clearly a Photoshop picture of him and Cam in Patriots uniforms talking to one another, but just said, like, Newton, Massachusetts, obviously a play on words towards Cam Newton's last name, hashtag let's work, just to be like, yeah, guys, look at this. We're back. We might be better than ever. And Tom Brady has to come in and slide into the DMs or the comments section and say, I will always be your number one, smiley face. I mean, Tom, Dasco, don't we have better things to do, honestly?
Tom is caught in a bad bromance.
Yeah.
And with Julian Edelman. I mean, it's going to take him a long time to get over New England. Yes, that was part of his life and the fabric of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Jealousy, maybe. I think whoever goes in there at quarterback, you can guarantee, rest assured, that Tom Brady's going to be watching every single move now that Cam Newton's making.
Oh, 100%. 100%. But I just don't get why.
You think inside deep he wants him to fail?
Well, I'm sure there's a very small percentage in there because you're just, that's the competitor. And we all know how, that Tom Brady is a competitor through and through. You don't win the amount of rings that you do with the system that he was a part of there in New England. But I know that Tom has really, in the last couple of years, really taken on the social media role by storm. He's funny. He's a really good follow across the board. But I just found it, I'm just like, how petty, in a way, for him to just be, why do you have to circle back? I will always be your number one. You left. You got your own team. You got your own buddies down in Florida. You're living tax-free. You guys are having a great time. Why you got to comment on Julian Edelman's, I will always be your number one? I get it. It's harmless. But at the same time, you're just kind of like, really?
Just let it go. He shouldn't have commented, there on that post at all. He should have just let it be. Stick to his TikTok routines.
Exactly.
And call it a day. So you know, Cam, there was a really good story today in The Ringer that I was reading from Nora Princiotti. And Cam Newton, 2-0 against the Patriots, and he played well against New England, 2-0, right? 525 mm-hmm. yards passing in those two games, 106 yards rushing, 6 passing TDs. So 2-0 might seem like a small sample size.
Because it is.
But you go back now and look at these quarterbacks who have never beaten the Patriots. Never beaten the Patriots. Matt Ryan, your guy, Kirk Cousins.
No, it's not.
Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck never beat the Patriots. Tony Romo could never beat the Patriots. Carson Palmer could never beat the Patriots.
Sure. Well, and Cam probably won't be able to beat them at all this year because he's going to be on that team. But do you think, who do you think has a bigger challenge this season? Cam learning the system, learning the Patriot way, and competing in not a great AFC East, or with Tom down in Tampa Bay with a new team, definitely a few more keys on his keychain in terms of freedom, but a very competitive NFC South. Who has a tougher climb?
Oh, tougher climb is Cam. You know, again, he's got to prove himself all over again. We talked on the show yesterday, 0-8 his last 8 starts, coming back from injuries. We don't know if the shoulder is better, if his legs, his knee's better, injured in the preseason game against New England a year ago, and, you know, he doesn't come back. There's a lot of question marks, I think, around Cam, whereas with Tom Brady, especially he's got the safety valve. He's got Gronk.
Right.
So anything on offense, they're going to, you know, hey, I can't find this guy. He doesn't. Okay. Dump off to Gronk 15, 20 yards. He'll just, you know, power himself and pick up yardage. So I think it's a lot easier, I think, for Tom to fit in. And, you know, Tom's having those secret practices and all of that.
Not
right
so
now.
Secret because everybody knows when he has them.
Does he always have to, like, bend the rules? I mean, seriously. But, like, I think it's going to be more difficult for Cam. And Cam doesn't even have the starting job yet, per se.
No. But you don't sign and bring him in. And I know that his deal is very much incentive-laden. I think it's worth up to $7.5 million. But you don't bring him into that locker room without the intention of seeing it. And putting him in that starting role, because maybe Jared Stidham is the next guy. Maybe he is going to be better than Jimmy Garoppolo would have been in a Patriots uniform if Tom hadn't forced that trade away. But at the end of the day, I don't think Bill Belichick is in the camp that says, yeah, let's just write this year off. Like he will do whatever it takes to make sure that team is competitive. And I think it just might be enough of a change up with Cam Newton's skill set, as long as he's healthy. As you said, Dasko, there's a lot of question marks all over the place. But I really think that this could unlock a very different type of Patriots offense and just could really be successful, especially since they are in the division that they are, where Buffalo has been a playoff team, is absolutely on the upswing. The Jets are trying to improve. Whether or not that will actually come to fruition, we will never really know, I guess. But that's a much easier road into the playoffs on the AFC side than it is on the NFC.
Yeah, I believe so. And, you know, I think this is the time, I think, for like a N'Keal Harry to step up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Last year was his rookie year. I think he kind of just trying to figure things out there. I think he was banged up a little bit. And, you know, the running game, I think they're going to be probably more of a run team, run-oriented team, two tight ends, I think, than we've seen in the past.
Yeah.
I think they're going to try to be more of a run-based offense and then, you know, try to open things up offensively. But
right.
I think they're going to have to, yes, they will have to, you know, Lindsay, go back now and retool the offense to make it to something that fits the style of Cam Newton.
Right.
That's what they're going to have
to do. And the new version of Cam Newton, because the Cam Newton where he's rushing for one touchdown and 120 yards in addition to throwing two in the air, you just, his body cannot keep taking that beating. Eventually that's going to run out of gas. And you want to make sure you keep him healthy because he has had a history for a while. But you don't want to completely rob him from what makes him unique and what makes him special, because Cam is going to have to be mobile. You just don't want him taking it upon himself. But when you have a running game with a couple of good running backs and a couple of good tight ends, you know, there's just so many options. You're going to be moving down the field in much shorter bursts, but who cares as long as you get in the end zone?
Yeah, you've got Sony Michel, and you've got, you know, good running backs, and I think, you know, you've got a good system there already in place,
mm-hmm.
And you can simplify it for Cam Newton. I was looking at other quarterbacks, too, that have losing records, right?
Yeah.
Against the Patriots. Peyton Manning, 8-12. Patrick Mahomes, 1-2. Aaron Rodgers, 1-2. Phillip Rivers is 1-8 against the Patriots.
Whoops.
1-8.
Yeah, that's
he could never be a starting quarterback for the Patriots.
Well, that's why he's playing for Indy, and it's going to be an interesting little experiment with Cam Newton under the center of the New England Patriots offense. He obviously has to earn that job, but there's a lot of quarterbacks with different jerseys that we're not used to seeing them in the upcoming season. But you know, Tom, just worry about yourself. Worry about your secret workouts that aren't so secret. You don't need to say, yeah, we were friends first every time somebody on the Patriots likes to say, hey, we might be moving on a little bit because you moved on from us. Yeah, that's just the ex sliding back into your DMs.
Trolling will not stop there. It won't end there.
No,
it will
not
end there. He's
going
to be trolling all season long.
Yeah, well,
all season long.
Tom ends with the trolls, but we like to end with positive vibes and good feelings, and that's why we like to bring some positive stories to close out our show here for our Cheers segment, where we hoist our metaphorical tall, our small, our litten, our bitten to someone or something somewhere that's good and bright. So, Dasko, what kind of positivity are you bringing to us today?
Okay, artist The Weeknd this week, not on the weekend, but during the week, he donated $1 million to help those affected by COVID-19. So half of the million went to Music Cares. That's to help out artists who are in need, and the rest going to frontline hospital workers of something called the Scarborough Health Network. And
sure.
Earlier this month, you may recall, he donated $500,000 to nonprofits committed to racial equality. On Instagram, yes, I do watch my Instagram feed.
Okay.
He put out a message with receipts of his donations, and he urged everyone with big pockets to give and give big. And if you have less, please give whatever you can, even if it's a small amount. Last I checked, Blinding Lights was still getting a lot of airplay,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. That album,
I think, it's
in
general, the top three.
Killer.
Top three on Billboard.
I love The Weeknd.
It's still up there on, yeah, it's still up there on Billboard. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to see from
Thanks.
Him opening up his checkbook and helping out a lot of people, a lot of people looking for help and spreading the wealth around. Good stuff, Dasko. And mine's Corona involved as well, but it's actually some good stuff here, because these kids in New York got a surprise of a lifetime when some of their artwork showed up on a giant billboard as a colorful reminder to frontline workers that we all thank them for their service. This is coming to us from the Good News Network. So basically, kids have been in New York and across the the country, as you're at home, you're looking for things to do, but essential workers obviously are still going to work. The front lines in the hospitals, in our grocery stores and everywhere else, kids were coloring these things and basically taping them to their windows and doors and of offering encouragement. So Shutterfly, which is an online photo printing business, I'm sure you've been on that website. I have been ordered plenty from there, as well as my grandma, who sends me pictures all the time. But they chose the designs from more than 450 works of art submitted from children across the nation during the company's hashtag Create Thanks campaign on Twitter and Instagram. So what they did, Dasko, is they took all these pieces of artwork and they put them on a huge billboard in the middle of Times Square. The Times Square! Seven-year-old Kelly Rose Simpson Ford, who is one of the featured artists, is from Long Island, and a granddaughter of a New York City transit worker who inspired her drawing. And she just wanted him to show him appreciation for helping people commute to work on the transit system. And her mixed media thank you has gone on from hanging on her front door to now being on display in Times Square. You know, while NYC's been in the beginning stages of reopening, essential workers there continue to rely on mass transit during the pandemic. We know what you know as well as anybody else, Dasko. That is a public transit town in New York. And so all of those people have been working and putting themselves at risk. So Shutterfly wanted to use the thank yous and the great drawings and to display them and thank all the workers that have done so much in New York as they kind of emerge out of the coronavirus, because they were the biggest hit area as everything kind of came down. So cheers to Shutterfly. Cheers to all the kids that are coloring all of these things. And what a memory to have if you're one of those kids that's selected, right? Your artwork is on Times Square. Crazy.
Very, very cool.
Very cool, Dasko. Well,
I had nightmares last night. I watched Dr. Sleep, you know, that movie. I don't know. It's not for the weak of heart. I need a good rom-com tonight. So
yeah, don't watch horror movies before you go to sleep, Dasko. That's like 101.
I should not
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Dr. Sleep.
Turn on some SpongeBob.
Dr. Sleep gave me no sleep.
No sleep for Dasko, but we'll make sure that you're well and rested for tomorrow's show, because we're back, as we always are, weekdays 3 to 5 p.m. I want to thank Trent, thank Paul, thank you, Dasko, and the rest of you, thanks for listening. Be well, stay safe, and wear your damn masks. Bye!